Part 5. Homefront USA. Taos, New Mexico. Arthur Sinclair, Jr. is the picture of an old-world patrician. Tall, lean, with close-cropped white hair. He speaks into the ether, rarely pausing for questions. During the war, Mr. Sinclair was director of the U.S. government's newly formed DSTRES, or Department of Strategic Resources.
I don't know who first thought of the acronym DSTRES, or if they consciously knew how much it sounded like distress, but it certainly could not have been more appropriate. Establishing a defensive line at the Rocky Mountains might have created a theoretical safe zone, but in reality, that zone consisted mainly of rubble and refugees. There was starvation, disease, homelessness in the millions. Industry was in shambles. Transportation and trade had evaporated. And all of this was compounded by the living dead, both assaulting the Rocky line and festering within our safe zone. We had to get our people on their feet again, clothed, fed, housed, back to work. Otherwise, this supposed safe zone was only forestalling the inevitable. That was why distress was created. And as you can imagine, I had a lot of on-the-job training. Those first months, I can't tell you how much information I had to cram into this withered old cortex. The briefings, the inspection tours. When I did sleep, it was with a book under my pillow. Each night, a new one, from Henry J. Kaiser to Vo Nguyen Giap. I needed every lesson, every word, every ounce of knowledge and wisdom to help me fuse a fractured landscape into the modern American war machine. If my father had been alive, he probably would have laughed at my frustration. He'd been a staunch New Dealer, working closely with FDR as controller of New York State. He used methods that were almost Marxist in nature, the kind of collectivization that would make Ayn Rand leap from her grave and join the ranks of the living dead. I'd always rejected the wisdom he tried to impart, running as far away as Wall Street to shut it out. Now I was racking my brains to remember it. One thing those New Dealers did better than any generation in American history was find and harvest the right tools and talent.
Tools and talent?
A term my son heard once in a movie. I found it described our reconstruction efforts rather well. Talent describes the potential workforce, its level of skilled labor, and how that labor can be utilized effectively. To be perfectly candid, our supply of talent was at a critical low. Ours was a post-industrial or service-based economy, so complex and highly specialized that each individual could only function within the confines of its narrow compartmentalized structure. You should have seen some of the careers listed on our first employment census. Everyone was some version of an executive or a representative, an analyst or a consultant, all perfectly suited to the pre-war world, but all totally inadequate for the present crisis. We needed carpenters, masons, machinists, gunsmiths. We had those people, to be sure, but not nearly as many as were necessary. The first labor survey stated clearly that over 65% of the present civilian workforce were classified F6, possessing no valued vocation. We required a massive job retraining program. In short, we needed to get a lot of white collars dirty. It was slow going. Air traffic was non-existent. Roads and rail lines were a shambles. And fuel. Good Lord, you couldn't find a tank of gas between Blaine, Washington and Imperial Beach, California. Add to this the fact that pre-war America not only had a commuter-based infrastructure, but that such a method also allowed for severe levels of economic segregation. You would have entire suburban neighborhoods of upper-middle-class professionals, none of whom had possessed even the basic know-how to replace a cracked window. Those with that knowledge lived in their own blue-collar ghettos, an hour away in pre-war auto traffic, which translated to at least a full day on foot. Make no mistake, bipedal locomotion was how most people traveled in the beginning.